Welcome to the Connect the Dots podcast with Jeffrey Klein, part of the Shareable Podcast Network, and sponsored by AIQ, a snackable newsletter of AI news for busy professionals. Jeffrey engages in conversations with a diverse group of successful people, exploring their stories and the dots they connect along the way. The hope is to inspire your journey and find ways for you to connect your own dots. Here's your host, Jeffrey.
My guest today is TA, product manager and music promotion and Gen AI video at YouTube. She has been a product leader with a proven track record of building and launching impactful 0-1 products at YouTube, Google, Spotify, Uber, and L'Oreal. Holy cow. Currently focused on visual generation. She's responsible for building the 0-1 platforms, new promotional formats across YouTube, and generative AI video opportunities for artists. Passionate about leveraging emerging technologies to empower artists and drive industry growth, she is dedicated to fostering diversity and inclusion within the tech industry and is excited about the potential of Gen AI and the joys of puppies, karaoke, and the occasional epic nap. I feel that one. Fun fact, she started college at 15 and has traveled to over 75 countries. Please welcome the worldly traveled T.
Hello. Super excited to be here. Thank you for having me.
Oh, and thank you for being here. We like to start at the beginning. So where were you born and what did your parents do for a living?
I was born in New York City, and my mother was a teacher, actually. She taught social studies and English.
Awesome. So when you were a kid in the big city, did you ever think about like, oh, when I grow up, I want to be X?
No, actually. So it's interesting. I know a lot of folks, when you're growing up, you have these big dreams and these aspirations for all the things that you want to accomplish as an adult. I did not have that. I've been fairly short-sighted as a growing kid, and I always had these milestones that I was trying to achieve or reach. So for me, it was initially about just finishing school. And then it became, what do I do after school? And for a while, it was grad school. So for undergrad, I actually went to Bard at Simon's Rock, which was actually a school for precocious children. So went to school with a lot of kids who started college early. Then I transferred to the new school in the city, and I majored in biology. When I was graduating, I had a question of, what exactly do I do now? So I actually was able to do a postdoc at Johns Hopkins School of Medicine, which actually then led into a longer program that I dropped out of. And yeah, that kind of is what was the catalyst for where I am now. And I can tell you that entire story, but yeah, that's the short version.
So now I'm curious. So let me still stay with you as a youngster. So you work in sort of video and music in that world. Were you really into music as a kid? Were you really into movies or TV, or like, were those big inspirations for you just in terms of how you think about the world?
I think so. I mean, definitely music at the very least. I feel like, what do they say? Music is the most accessible form of art. And I think there's a lot of truth to that. So when I was growing up, I actually lived in the projects for some time. And you'll see that with a lot of specific genres, there's a lot of storytelling. So you think about hip hop and R&B especially, it's a lot of storytelling around the lives that you're living and the fact that there's a lot of people that can actually relate to that. So I would say music was a way of actually connecting okay. folks across different communities, and basically giving a voice to the things that people were experiencing. So yeah, music was definitely a huge aspect of my life growing up. Some of my earliest memories, by the way, is, you know, like the music blasting on the weekends as everyone's cleaning, as we're all doing our chores. And then also, you know, when we were kids, having these, what we thought were, you know, intellectual debates, these pseudo debates about, you know, who the best rappers are and why. And meanwhile, we knew nothing.
So. All right, so let's hear it.
Oh.
Who at that time was the best rapper?
For me, it was Tupac. But there was a lot of blasphemy behind that because obviously, you know, Biggie was at the time like the king of New York. So yeah, for me, it was definitely Tupac. And I would stand by it. I think right now it's Kendrick, though, for sure.
All right.
What about you?
So interestingly, despite being a suburban white kid, I had a good friend who decided he wanted to educate me on hip hop and break dancing and all these things. And so I'm not gonna share the rap I did when I was about fourth or fifth grade. So I grew up loving, I was exposed to the Sugar Hill Gang really early and,
Yes.
thought it was great. And so those early, Run DMC, my music taste is really wide. And so but I definitely, hip hop and rap was something that was formative to me. And I think, again, even though I didn't necessarily relate to the experiences of what they were rapping about, I like the storytelling aspect of it. And I think that's partly what drew me to some of that was, and I think music in general, the best artists are the best storytellers. And that's just how I mean, you gotta have a good beat, let's be free, but it's what they're saying too, that is important.
Music
Now you
profession.
work for YouTube in kind of in this AI, generation. Was there something in your kind of early adult life or as a kid where technology, you were exposed to kind of technology in a way, or is that something that came later?
That came
How
later.
did you,
That
what
came
was your
way
first, like, oh my God, tech is pretty cool? Like, what was that moment like?
later. So after I left Hopkins, I needed to find a job quickly. So I started working at a pharma agency. And to this day, my manager at the time, who took a chance on me for absolutely no reason other than the fact that he was just an incredible and still is an incredible human, Justin Jackson, he hired me under his team. And it was a team of, I think it was just us actually. So he was the VP of comms for this pharma agency, and I was under him managing some of the additional comms that we needed for our partners. And interestingly, working on these pharma brands gave me this like insight into creativity in a very limited way, right? In a very conservative way. And I was able to move into a different agency that actually focused more on CPGs. And that's kind of where I was introduced. So going from brand marketing into digital marketing when I moved to a different agency, and then into digital media, I would say, is kind of where I started to get a taste for the underbelly of technology. So not just the interfaces that folks actually use to, build campaigns on the digital media side, but the actual ability to store data. So I became obsessed with data management platforms, and I was actually building data management platforms for the likes of L'Oreal, which is how I ended up in-house there. And yeah, that was actually really cool for me. It was interesting to see that, there are these technologies, it's cookie-based, right, where you actually can start to collate different identifiers that help you understand more about a person, and then build insights against that, right? And also all of the benefits that come out of that, which is more effective targeting because you're actually showing people things that are interesting to them and useful for them. And also you can, save your company a ton of money, but also, save a user a bad experience. So win-win. So yeah, I think building DMPs was probably when I became most interested in tech, and it kind of grew from there.
Yeah, it's interesting. You're just talking about data in general, which obviously is hugely important in business generally, but obviously with AI and how good is the data that you're using. But I always, I as a marketer dealing with people who have data, they collect it and then they just don't do anything with it. And so it's not just having good data, it's like, what are the insights that drive actionable, things that you're going to take from it. So I always think that's building them is great if you can connect the dots of the data and the insights to then take action. Now you've been, because you've worked, your journey has spanned entrepreneurship, ad tech, you're now leading products at arguably one of the world's most used platforms. Is there any leadership lesson that you've kind of learned along the way that you had to kind of learn the hard way?
Actually, quite a few. So I would say for me, there's always been a layer of feeling like a bit of an imposter. So I, because of, how I grew up, where I grew up, I was not exposed to a lot. I didn't know that product management was even a role, by the way. And when I eventually became aware of it, I by default assumed it was something that was completely out of my realm, just based on the assumption that I had, which is I didn't have the right background for it. So I would say something that I had to learn, and it took many, many years to get to this point, but I would say that folks shouldn't inherently limit themselves based on what they believe to be true. I think people are capable of a lot more than they know, and there's always an opportunity to learn and expand. And there's always something, I think, like there's a new interest always waiting around the corner for us. So my advice would actually be, as it relates to leadership, is one, keep interested in whatever seems new, or light some level of a spark in you, and just keep learning and growing and expanding. The other thing too is, I would say, take up space. I used to try to make myself the smallest person in the room, and I always just kind of assumed that everyone knew more about a topic than I did. And at some point, it became abundantly clear. There's a memory that I have, and fingers crossed the person who I'm thinking of does not watch this, but there's a memory I have of one of the companies I worked at. A VP, I was reporting into a VP at the time, and I think they were a VP. They were fairly senior, they're an exec. And they were in a pretty senior meeting, and they were demoing the tool that I actually built and launched at the company. Mm-hmm. And they didn't know how to actually use the tool. And so they were pinging me and asking me to give them like step-by-step instructions for how to actually do it. And it clicked in that moment that I should have been a bigger advocate for myself. I should have been in that room. I should have been in that meeting, because I would have done 1,000 times of a better job actually presenting the tool in a way that would have been impactful for the folks who were receiving that demo. And I learned to be more of an advocate for myself. So all I will say is, I think, when it comes to a lot of folks who have these like innate curiosities, more often than not, especially when you are the person working on something, you probably do know the most. And I don't think we need to pay attention to levels, I guess default back to social norms as it relates to who should speak and who should not speak. Just speak when you feel like it's impactful and you're adding value to the conversation, and don't when it's not. And I think that just simplifies life.
I love that. And I have a question about what advice you give your 21 year self. I think you just answered it.
Yeah.
Advocate for yourself.
Exactly.
So I think that's, really important. And you probably know more and are more capable than you realize, which is, I think, something that a lot of people, people that have been in careers for a long time still have imposter syndrome. And it's like, you just have to, have support and belief, and then you can just, what's the word?
Disbelief, right? Belief in the fact that you'll figure it out, especially when you have a history of actually executing, just believe in yourself.
100%. I love that. So I'm, we met at Philly Rec, Rec Philly, and you're involved. I love that, YouTube is doing this Future Insiders program in Philadelphia. First of all, if you could just share a little bit about what that is, and then also, what are kind of either the common challenges or the big dreams that you're hearing from emerging creators, and how is YouTube trying to kind of help them?
Ooh, okay. So I may not be the best person to answer this, only because that was one of the few times I've been looped in, and it was an honor, by the way, to also be included. So Future Insiders is actually an initiative that's led by the YouTube business team. Specifically, it's under Tuma Bassa, Adam McFarlane. So Tuma Bassa, I think, is the head of global culture, music culture. His title actually recently changed. I'll look it up and share it with you. But Tuma is incredible, right? Tuma is like someone who has lived and existed and curated and just shaped the music industry in a way that is almost undefinable. Incredible, incredible human, and honestly, truly an honor to know him. And same with Adam, by the way. So I think Adam has been spearheading Future Insiders for quite some time. But the idea is basically to give creators and artists the tools that they need that can actually help them succeed on our platform. And it's actually a really cool initiative because it really is grassroots and it really is community oriented. Mm-hmm. So I believe they lead around 6 activations a year. They go to different places around the globe. And the idea is to basically just bring the latest insights directly to the creator's doorstep. I think it drives a lot of impact. I think it drives a lot of value. It's an honor every time I get to join and see them in action. I think their team is doing incredible, phenomenal things. And yeah, so I, I the, the most recent one that I joined at Rec Philly, I was able to discuss Gen AI video opportunities that creators can lean into in order to help simplify some of their creation processes and workflows. And happy to talk more about that, but I would say leading into the, can you remind me of the second part of your question?
Yeah, just about what do you think, you know, what are you hearing from emerging creators about how they want to leverage tech? Let's go there.
I think it depends on the type of creator. And some of it is pretty intuitive, right? But I work mainly when it comes to Gen AI video in terms of how I collaborate with Google DeepMind and also with the Google Labs team. I'm mainly on the video end in terms of like video output. So various inputs, text, image, even video in certain cases with the intended goal of having a video output. This is something that makes a lot of sense for most creators, right? So not just music artists, but creators that are actually just, you know, vlogging about their lives, or podcasters, or any type of creator. And it's cool because as you probably know more than I do as a creator, it's fairly manual and intensive and resource heavy and time intensive and costly to actually produce these visual outputs. And then also all of the manual editing that's involved, like all of the post-production steps, just takes a lot of time, right? So as a creator, your currency is basically your visibility. So it's how often you're actually getting content out in front of users. And you need to have some sort of a regular, you know, cadence as it relates to your releases and your promotion of those pieces of content. And Gen Video can basically help with that. So Gen Video, I would say, is fairly non-controversial, which I really appreciate, given I know other types of generative AI, it can be a little bit more controversial. But what we've heard from a lot of the folks that we've spoken to is that their needs center in just the simplicity of the actual capabilities that are being presented to them. So how can we help them, as you know, the fact that none of us are, well, some of us are, but not a whole lot of us are prompters. We're not, you know, creative AI prompters specialists. We're not folks that are sitting there learning how to expand text to a certain degree with these, you know, 60 page outputs that we're then inputting into another LLM to then give us a prompt, right? So how do we actually
create— I do some of that.
Oh yeah, see, perfect. But a lot of creators don't, and right. That's fair. That's a lot of work. And so the idea is like, how do we actually simplify this for them on the front end so that they don't have to worry about some of those pieces, so that they can actually just generate without having to perfect the input that they have. Another desire is basically taking whatever that initial input is, let's say it's an image, and then building upon that, right? So you can actually create like a visualizer or a teaser with just an initial image input, and they can use that to actually help promote their upcoming content in a very simple way, but actually something that is stylistic or provides the level of like video effects that they wouldn't be able to include otherwise. And the other piece too is like, how do you use Gen Video to accomplish things that were never before possible? So going beyond your typical creative, you know, concepts into, let's build out these things that literally no one has ever seen before. How do we create entire empires that are made up of pink penguins? And you know, like, and I don't know, they have their own version.
I make them purple, but other than that, I'm with you.
Yeah, let's make it purple. You know, and they have their own version of Hunger Games, but in reality, it's actually just like slip and slide. So like, it's one of those things of how do you go beyond the bounds of what creativity has meant so far or thus far, and lean into anything that has never been seen before, so that these creators again can actually create something that they can actually show to their users and keep them engaged. So yeah, I think they've expressed quite a few needs. I'm sure I didn't even touch the tip of the iceberg there, but that's just a few of the needs that they've established.
Yeah, but I really like it. It expands possibility like that. Mm-hmm. That to me is one of the crazy things is because, especially for someone like me who's not technically creative but is very creative, to now have tools to see the things that are in my brain is pretty cool. That's like really it's like, oh, I can just have these tools help me with my purple fill in the blank. You know, and it's to me still magic. There's something about Gen Video that's just like, wow, like this just, I had an idea and now it's there. And it's and I think it's funny when people think it didn't do it perfect the first time. I'm like, dude, like, can you you're creating something from nothing. Like I think there's still, you know, managing those expectations of like, it's super powerful and it's the worst it'll ever be. It gets better and better and better.
And so better. Just, yeah. And
give,
I think
give it a second and you'll get there.
And I think some of the concerns that we've heard too, to give you the flip side of this, is there are folks that are really concerned about, you know, the potential, you know, impact to their careers or to their jobs. And I think that's valid because, yeah, like if you are currently a video editor, you want to make sure that you can actually continue to be a video editor. And so what I like to remind folks of is that this is still very much a tool, right? Like I am not a creative. My output is always going to be significantly more limited than a creative's output, 100% to the point you just made, in terms of like all of the ideas that exist in your brain, actually getting it out there. And the other piece too is like, this is 100% supposed to be a tool, right? So if you think about it from you are the chef, this is your sous chef. This is supposed to actually help support.
I love that. Oh, I like that.
Yeah. So it's like, it's supposed to help you in terms of, you know, maximizing your own time. But it doesn't necessarily replace, for sure.
Well, and the example recently that I thought was really interesting. So there was the video that was aired on the NBA Finals for Clichy, for a betting app, where all the clips were AI. But people are like, oh my God, I can just kind of do it. And it's like, no. The guy who created it was a video director for 25 years. And he used like 7 or 8 clips of 300 you create. Like, I think people like see sometimes the demos or things and it's like, it still needs work and expertise and vision of, and creativity of all those things. And so you can't just roll up and be like, oh, I've never done anything in this space and let me just do it. But you can do something. And that's kind it becomes that blend of like, now people who haven't experienced it can be creators and start that. And then people who are experienced creators can optimize what they do and do it in a way that, so I think it's about keeping the context of how and when and the way that you use these very powerful tools that are getting better all the time.
Mm-hmm. Fully agree.
So let me talk about your actual job now. So what do you find kind of most challenging about your job?
In terms of being a product manager, correct?
Yep.
There's a few things. there's definitely a few things. I think the interesting part about being a product manager is that you do a lot to realize a vision, but you don't have control over what actually happens, right? So you map out, you know, the vision, the strategy, requirements, then you hand off and you're still part of the process end to end. But at some point, you know, you're working with other cross-functional, you know, leads and teammates to make sure that they can actually execute on this vision. And sometimes things go wrong. And I think for a lot of product managers, or maybe this is just a me thing, I don't know. It's hard to not feel like if something goes wrong, it's not your fault, right? Because like, it's your project. Every project and feature and product that I think PMs build, they all basically they become our children, right? So they become extensions of us because we just spend so much time trying to actually realize this goal with, you know, the idea that we actually want to drive impact for whoever our end user is. And yeah, so I think that sometimes is a bit of a struggle. I think the other thing that's hard too is aligning stakeholder opinions. We talked about this earlier, but I do think sometimes there is a default judgment that happens where the more senior you are, the more of an expectation there is that your opinion matters most. And I feel like I've seen quite a few times over the span of my career where, you know, obviously the more senior you are, the more oversight you have, which means you're not in the day-to-day, you're not in the weeds. So I found that the most impactful leads I've worked with are the ones that are able to take a step back and hear from the folks that are actually in the weeds so that they can actually build an informed opinion. And the ones that do not do that, which by the way, it's like, you're going to find that across any function, any, I would say as a PM, I actually tend to have to navigate that more than not. So I've had to learn how to present arguments in a way that truly is influential to move in the needle and change in minds and opinions. And by the end, I've also had to learn that I can't always do that. So sometimes if someone has their mind made up on something,
pick your battles.
Exactly. It is what it is, you know? So yeah, I would say the hardest part for me too is when I truly believe in something, sometimes I do have to remind myself that it's okay to take a step back.
That's valuable. Hard, but valuable.
Yeah, incredibly hard. But I think it's the one saving grace that we could all have as it relates to preserving our mental health. And I think it's something that everyone should do, no matter their career. Just know when to take a step back.
So let's flip it on the other side. So what do you find most rewarding about your role? Let's
get so much. Part. So many things. Yeah. No, the beauty of being a product manager is that there are no two PMs that are the same, right? We all have very different and diverse backgrounds. We've all ended up in product management in different ways. And I think it's really cool how for a lot of us, our day-to-days are always different. So I spend a lot of time in meetings. I get to meet incredibly interesting folks that are working on incredibly interesting things. I get to partner with other orgs that are, you know, working on the future of technology, I get to meet with partners who are, you know, interested in you know, being, you know, thought partners and research partners and understanding more about their pain points. And so I think the beauty of being a PM is that you actually just get to sit across the entire spectrum of an opportunity, and you get to work with so many different functions, and you get to actually realize something. You get to, you know, provide the initial inputs, the initial strategy into something, get that buy-in, and then actually see it executed, and then actually get to see that the end impact for your users. And I think there's nothing more satisfying than that. Like, I think it's two sides of the same coin, right? Like, it's equally frustrating and equally rewarded. And yeah, I think it's a beautiful role. I think for folks that have complex minds, and the, you know, your mind is always in 20 million places, being a PM is probably a great career, because that by default is what your mind will be doing. So yeah.
And you also happen to work at a juggernaut. YouTube is, you know, must just being as big as it is, and also obviously the relationship with Google even, you know, more so. How do you kind of stay agile and creative, especially when you're kind of these high impact product decisions in cutting technology with AI?
Yeah.
What gives you your edge, your spark?
I've been into vibe coding recently, actually. Mm. I think, vibe coding, I feel like it's actually going to change the game as it relates to how product managers are actually able to convey visions to leadership, especially at these juggernauts. So what's different about YouTube or Google from my previous roles is I've worked at Uber, I've worked at Spotify. At the time, they were very small companies in terms of the number of employees. And I think Spotify is even smaller now than when I was there. I'm pretty sure it was like less than 5,000 when I was an employee there. And at Uber, I feel like the numbers are similar. So yeah, definitely.
Do you know what the number, the headcount is at YouTube?
I don't know what it is at YouTube. We can just Google that really quickly. Let me tell you in one second.
There you go.
YouTube.
Or Google. I mean, I can't even imagine how many employees are at Google worldwide.
Definitely over 100,000, I think. Yeah, it's almost 200,000. So 182,000 people globally. Ooh. So yeah, a lot of processes.
So you've worked at Spotify and Uber, huge brands. You're now working at YouTube under Google, pretty much the cream of the crop, you know, in terms of people's aspirations as creators. I'm curious, you know, most people say, T, you're a success. But I like to ask, how does T define success?
Yeah, I think my definition of success has changed over the years. At one point, I too would have said the same thing. If I could work at Google, then that would be success for me, right? That would be tier one of the companies that I could actually product manage at. And the idea for being a PM is that you actually want to just like amplify your impact. So working at a company where, you know, we have billions of monthly active users, that's major, that's massive. And I think it clearly means that any of the products that I'm able to work on will have that impact. But now success for me, I think is a bit more internal. It's kind of become more of a question of where do I find peace and how do I amplify that? Like, how do I drive the most contentment that I possibly can in my existence? And then also, how do I make sure that I'm doing that in a way that is positively contributing to someone else's life? So success for me is actually just, I find success in kindness, and I find success in how folks interpret their life and their experiences. I think getting to a place where I can have a better response to something that has happened for me is success. But yeah, I think from a career perspective, I really truly think, once upon a time, my definition of success was career. It was career, it was salary. And now I definitely feel like it's become more of a mental health exercise and making sure that I'm not negatively contributing to society.
I say that a lot of times. I'll say, I try and say there's enough negativity in the world. I don't want to add to it. That's exactly kind of my approach to things. Exactly. It also just reminded me of a story that I just love this story. And I may have even shared it on this podcast, but I'll share it again because it's so good, which is John Lennon, when he was like 5 or 6, they went through the class. And they're like, what do you want to be when you grow up? What do you want to be? And so they said, John, what do you want to be? He said, happy.
Yeah.
And I thought that was the best answer.
It's true. Oh, so true. It's something I want for the world, for sure.
So with that in mind, what inspires T?
Everything inspires me. Actually, truly, everything inspires me. I'm a people watcher. So just seeing people on a regular basis inspires me. I think very casual moments or just serendipitous moments inspire me. I think a lot about quantum theory. So this idea of superposition and how, or even entanglement, right? Or quantum entanglement and how every moment kind of branches off into all of these endless possibilities of things that could be or will be. Or even as humans, we are consistently being layered, our experiences and who we are and all the different iterations and versions of ourselves to become this ever expanding, massive version of who we are. And I think that there's something really cool about that, that the older we get, the more we experience, hopefully the more we can actually apply that to life. I don't know, given the current state of the world, I don't know that that's actually in practice, but in theory, it's a beautiful thing. So I think I'm inspired by everything and anything. I'm inspired by the fact that I get to wake up every morning and, I literally look out and it's a sunny day. Actually, I'm really inspired by sun. Sun and beach is top forms of inspiration for me, for sure. But yeah, honestly, truly, everything inspires me. Heartbreak inspires me as well. I mean, it inspires a lot of people, right? There's nothing that will change your life faster than heartbreak. And I think a lot of other emotions too, they definitely help influence me and inspire me in a way that, has never been the case before. So maybe that's part of growing up, but yeah, I'm trying to find inspiration in the minutia.
And I think that's a lot of times what people miss, and I forget who was, I think it may have been Ed Helms again, was talking about when we think about life, we're focused on the big things and we don't realize the little things actually are, It was Jerry Seinfeld in his commencement speech. He was like, get obsessed with the minutia, the little things, those are where the joy can come from. Absolutely. In ways that you never expected. And I love that idea. So whether it's purple, the color purple. I'm obsessed with the color purple. It's a little thing that
the worn purple.
It's again, I think people are so focused on the big things and they get weighed down. And it's just take one little beautiful thing at a time. I'm curious, as someone who's really in the Gen AI space, if people are in particular with video are I want to get better. I want to kind of increase my AI literacy. Where would you say to start? Where do I start if I really haven't done much there?
I would actually say,
I want to be a creator.
Definitely they should start with LLMs or large language models, or foundational models. They should use Gemini and ChatGPT because I think it's a fairly intuitive way of getting started. And a lot of those are now multimodal, platforms where you actually have the ability to, or models, I should say, but they have the ability to use them to generate a range of insights and outputs. And so I like to use LLMs to learn about LLMs or other types of AI. And I would highly recommend that more people do that, because the beauty of it is that you can input within Gemini or ChatGPT, whatever your choice is there, how you like to receive information, how you like to learn. And then you can ask it to explain things to you in that way. And so it's like learn and tailor to you, I think, is one of the best opportunities to get more involved in it, learn more about it. And then also like start signing up for free trials as well. Within Google, of course, you know, I have to give a little spot for Google, but
Welcome to the mothership. It's all good.
Yeah, but we have these Google One subscriptions where it's Google One AI Ultra and Pro. And so there are two different tiers where you can actually start to tap into different AI tools that we have within Google. And for the Pro version, you can access it for free for a month when you sign up. And then for Ultra, I think it's 50% off for the first month. So I highly recommend, you know, trying those out, because then you get access to a range of tools that you can actually, you know, start to experiment with or just test out and, you know, start building out these creations in a very lightweight capacity without any sort of like commitments. And yeah, just learn from there and watch YouTube videos too. That's my other favorite thing. I love watching YouTube videos to learn more about things that I have no understanding of. So for me, the last video I watched was about opals, how to cut a water opal. Will I ever cut a water opal? Probably not, but I now know how to do it. Exactly. So yeah, I think just trying to use these models to your own advantage as it relates to learning in the best way that you can.
Well, I'll give a shout out to, you know, Google One. I am a pro account holder and been playing with it and finding it just super fascinating and magical, you know. And I also, you know, one of the things I often say is AI can help you learn anything you're interested in, including how to better leverage AI. So people will sometimes say to me, how do I do this in AI? I'm like, I don't know, why don't you ask AI? They'll tell you. Exactly. So it's like, oh, you have to keep, you know, ask your sous chef. They actually know some stuff. So in terms of gen AI video, particularly since that's kind of your domain, things are moving fast. You know, if we look, when we look at the difference between a year ago or even 6 months ago, how much better it is now, what do you think is the kind of next trend, the next, you know, place that Gen AI is going to, video is going to be able to do?
I can tell you what I hope it will do. Okay. And yeah, I can't really speak to any internal roadmaps, of course, but in terms of like my own personal opinion as T, I'm really interested to see how we start to automate more of the workflows, and also how we start to build in more like task management in a more automated way as well. So what that actually could be is right now, most folks who are using like these gen video tools are probably using other tools as well. So let's say in my case, if I want to create a prompt, I will probably start in Gemini. I'll give it, you know, initial input. It will help me write a more robust prompt. And then I will put it into another tool. And on my case, it's probably Flow. And then I will have some level of an export and then bring it into a different tool. So then I can actually refine it. And then like layer on audio, for example, if I want to, although there are video models that do add audio as well. But like, if I want to add music, then I will have to do that separately. So I actually do think that it's just going to be a lot more capabilities that just bring all of that into one surface or just one platform. I also think it's going to be interesting to see like what the multimodality looks like in terms of right now, it's a lot of you have a set of inputs for one output, right? Why or when we actually get to a place of you can actually do it in the inverse, I'm curious to see what that looks like too. I don't know how far out we are from that, but the same way that I can use, you know, text and images to generate a video, what if I could use a video in the same capacity to then generate something else? So like music or something else. So I feel like, yeah, we're going to start to see more of a multimodal opportunity. And then I also feel like, yeah, we're going to simplify the task flows. And I also am curious to see how agentic AI plays into all of this. So as we start to think about, you know, these decisioning layers, and the fact that it will take the insights and then actually apply the insights, what will that mean for creators? I'm super curious to know. I have a feeling that at some point in the, you know, distant future, we'll get to a place where we likely are generating videos on demand based on the user, based on what we know about the user, based on what we think they'd actually engage with. And I'm really excited for that future, because I actually think it's going to be a different type of, you know, content that users will be consuming, and it's going to be fully tailored to them. And that's going to be really cool. So yeah, I'm excited for that.
Yeah, no, that's I agree. It's kind of cool. One of the things is also just in terms of multimodal that I think what I find is people who are more in AI seem to be doing this more is voice. So whereas a lot of people are still texting, but being able to just chat with your AI companion in a way that's just natural conversational back and forth.
Absolutely.
I've done it, you know, when you're driving and things, and I think it's just an area that's going to, it's going to become, you're going to wake up and say, good morning, AI, you know, and it's just going to like, what's on my day today? And, you know, oh, I need to change it. You know, it's just going to become one of those things where your little assistant can help you with everything. And you just need to talk to it. Exactly. Okay. So now T, we're going into our, I call them rapid fire, but we'll see how sometimes they go fast. Sometimes they go slow. And if you find one you don't quite know the answer to, you can always say, just say pass. So here we go. If a movie was made about your life, who would you want to play you?
Given I just watched Straw Netflix, I would say Taraji P. Henson or Tiana Taylor. And hopefully I said her name right. I'm pretty sure I did. Yeah.
Now, this is a tough one, but can you name a book? Oh, sorry. No. Can you name one of your favorite movies? The movie first.
One of my favorite movies. Oh, have you ever seen Beautiful, B-I-U, with Javier Bardem?
I don't think I have, but that sounds intriguing.
That's right. One of my favorite movies, as well as Hector's Search for Happiness.
Love that.
It's a feel good.
Can you name a book that left a lasting impression on you? Oh, she came prepared.
The Courage to be Disliked.
Absolutely. Wow. Even that title's pretty powerful. And then this is a toughie for anyone in this fit. Can you name a favorite AI tool?
I'm going to say Flow.
Yeah.
I use a lot of them, and I actually really do like Flow.
Can you name a favorite emoji?
Ooh, I'm a fan of the, you know, the emoji that looks like it's melting. You're going to have to input that so folks can see what it is, but that one's my favorite one.
Okay. Can you name a favorite non-digital activity?
As we know, I'm a fan of naps. I think naps are one of the best things ever. I'm also a fan of reading as well. And I mean, this is still somewhat digital, but karaoke is definitely one of my favorite somatic wellness exercises. I also love bowling. I love a lot of non-digital things, actually. But yeah, emphasis on rest. I'm a big fan of rest.
Naps or something. So my grandfather, who lived to 97, took a nap every day after lunch.
Wow. That's there you beautiful. Go. Yeah. That is beautiful.
Yeah. Can you think of one thing you can't live without?
My dogs, for sure. Aww. My little angels. I mean, it should have been like air or water, I'm sure. But no, for me, it's my dogs.
Most people, I think, I always expect the answer, coffee.
That too. Yeah, no.
Because a lot of people are like, I can't live without coffee. Finally, if you could be credited with inventing something that either exists already or does or doesn't exist, what would it be and why?
Ooh, this is the hardest of them all, for sure. Something I would want to be credited for creating or inventing. Huh. Maybe the iPhone?
That'd be pretty awesome.
Yeah, because I actually feel like that
transformational.
Was fairly transformational, right? In terms of how we actually engage with both digital and non-digital existence. So yeah, I actually think that would be, and something that I use the most, and something that I think is pretty powerful in terms of every update that they have. So yeah, definitely the iPhone. What would yours be?
I'm a huge, Teleportation.
Oh, so it doesn't have to exist.
No, it doesn't have to exist.
Oh, I can give you a more interesting answer then. Okay, I like teleportation.
Because I know it exists, I'd be really happy.
I would want to have the ability to shift narratives. Yeah,
Like
I
a
would.
Jedi mind trick. This
Yeah,
is the real
I know
narrative.
why you shouldn't be able to do that, but I actually,
Well,
I would want to
yeah,
play.
but in the right hands, if it's you'd have it for good, so.
Yeah, it would be interesting to see what we do with that. But yeah, no, that'd be fun.
So T, you've been really generous with your time. Is there anything at the moment that you want to promote or that you want to share? Something that you want people to know about?
Yeah, absolutely. Definitely check out the Google One subscriptions just so you can actually get started if it's something that's of interest for folks. If anyone has any questions for me about my career or anything that I'm currently doing, they can always reach out on LinkedIn. It's my it would be slash in slash TESAENCHAVIS, so just my full name. And yeah, I'm actually super excited to see what's to come in this field, and excited to hear more about the folks that are going to be on your future episodes who I know are also in this space. And thank you for having me. I appreciate all everything that we just discussed, and this was super fun.
Thank you. This has been fun, which is what I try and do, but it doesn't always work out that way. But I've been very fortunate to have amazing guests like you, who just give, and their authenticity comes through, and are very generous with how they share their journey. So I want to thank you for all of that, and I want to thank you for helping us connect the dots. Thank you for taking the time to listen to this podcast sponsored by AIQ. Subscribe at AIQNewsletter.com. Music produced by Sam Miller. Please subscribe on your preferred podcast platform so you don't miss any future episodes. If you could do me a favor and please leave a review on iTunes, I would really appreciate it. Remember, story matters and is the best way connect the dots.